on shortly here, and H minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
So it is Saturday, the 10th of September in the glorious future year, 2022, and I am back from Chicago and the World Science Fiction Convention. I apologize for the interruption in service. I had no wired internet at the convention, which had, and the Wi-Fi, you know, connection speed was okay, but it wasn't steady enough to use for much of anything. Anyway, so yes, I will give you a brief report from the Worldcon, but first, poetry! Now, maybe you wonder what I'm talking about. What's this about poetry, you say? What kind of a show is this? Is this guy gonna write poems and read them to us? No. I don't write poetry. Very, very rarely do I write poetry. And generally speaking, when I do, it's haiku, which I wouldn't inflict upon you. No, this is poetry that someone else has written. Now, if you've been following me for a long time, you may know that back in 2015, I guess it was, I happened to be in Los Angeles, California, and I went down to Little Tokyo, which is a lovely little neighborhood. I believe while I was there, I had yuzu sorbet, which was just wonderful in the warm weather. Well, while I was there, I encountered a man who was standing around offering to write poems for anybody on any subject for a dollar. I said, all righty then, and I showed him someone had given me a postcard with a copy of the very famous Apollo 11 photograph, which I like to say is the best photograph of all time, with Michael Collins taking the photograph. Michael Collins is the only human being who does not appear in the picture, because the lunar excursion module, the limb with Buzz and Neil, is in the foreground of the picture, and in the background of the picture is the Earth. So the only human being who doesn't appear in the picture is Mike. So I always refer to Uncle Mike Collins. You know, he's like the uncle who always takes the photographs at the family picnic, but never shows up in them himself because he's always behind the camera. Anyhow, so I paid the guy to write a poem about that. And I'm not going to read that poem right now, just to confuse you. I am going to read it later, but no. Just now, my father, who occasionally writes poetry, handed me a poem and said, I don't know if you can do anything with this. Apparently, he's been following the news about NASA's attempts to launch their SLS rocket and their Artemis mission and all that. And he wrote a poem about it, and I'm going to read that for you now. And this is the world premiere, I think, of this poem, because I don't believe that he has read it at any poetry readings yet. So here is a poem, the title of which is Back to the Moon. NASA says they're taking us back to the moon. Seeing that rocket towering a football field above the launch pad surely takes me back. Back to a childhood, eagerly watching the launches that seem to come off like clockwork, each orbit of a Gemini capsule paving another mile on our road to Luna, inspiring me to read every science book in the library so I could one day join the adventure. Take me back to the days when astronauts were heroes I could really look up to a time when we set big goals and carried them through, and if you said, "Houston, we have a problem," some guy in a white shirt with a pocket protector would step up with a solution. Unlike now, when talking heads and politicians may tell you it's not really a problem, and those Apollo flights were all fake news. I remember those mighty Saturn V's standing on the pad, their shiny black and white paint jobs betraying their violent Nazi missile ancestry. Today's rocket looks more like a giant orange plush toy, more cuddly than fearsome. After two failed attempts, they cancel the launch, take the rocket back to the hangar. "We'll get back to you later." But I wish someone would take me back to the moon. All right, so that was the poetry corner for today. And now what am I going to talk about? Well, I did promise you some kind of report on the Worldcon. And so here it is. Now, I have some photographs that are on Tumblr, and I will link to that, I guess, when I put up the page for today's show. Actually, there, I've dropped the link into the comm chat for those of you who are on SDF comm chat while, and, you know, listening live. And if you're not listening live, it's very likely that you've got hold of the same link through the page on the Anon Radio website. So, one way or the other. Now, one thing I would like to do is to... So, Tumblr as a website is advertising supported but not very well, and recently the people running it, it was recently sold to the people who run WordPress, who realized that people are on there because they like to be on there, not for any other reason. You know, the way people are maybe on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram because they feel they gotta push their product or that's where their friends are or whatever. No, people are on Twitter because they want to be there for some obscure psychological reason. And so they realized, hey, people will pay money to advertise on Twitter in a way that just we send, you know, for $10 we will show your post to 2,500 randomly selected people. No kind of targeting, no nothing of that. Just 2,500 random people on Tumblr will see your post. Ordinarily wouldn't. And I said, you know, that sounds like a pretty good idea, actually. Maybe I'll try that. Unfortunately, my great deep and abiding misfortune, it turns out that payments for that are processed through Stripe, and so you've got to use a credit card. I figured, you know, if I could use my PayPal balance that I get from Patreon, that would make it really easy. But no. So gotta figure that one out. But yeah, just, you know, have that pop up to 2,500 random people and see what the result is. Maybe nothing. Maybe hate mail. It happens. Hum-de-dum-de-dum. What else? So, I had two tables, and I was supposed to have two art boards and pipe and drape along the back. What I wound up with was three art boards. Now, the art boards were not what I'd been expecting. I was expecting pegboard. because I had pegboard hooks to hang my pictures from. Well, it wasn't pegboard, it was cloth-covered bulletin board type of thing. And so what I needed was drapery hooks. And drapery hooks I found difficult to obtain. So I didn't actually get the pictures hung up until Thursday evening. I mean, to be perfectly blunt, because when I got there, the setup wasn't what I was expecting, and I requested a change in the setup. I left for a while. Anyway, the upshot of it all was that I got relatively little of the display setup done on Wednesday, which was the day set aside for that. And so most of the setting up that I did was actually done on Thursday, which was an actual convention day, although not a very heavily trafficked one. I should have done better in that regard, but as it was, I only got the art panels hung Thursday, just before closing time. In fact, I have to apologize to one of my friends who sat at that display while I was off trying to hunt for these drapery hooks, a process that took a couple of hours. Anyway, so I had it set up because I had two tables. I brought a lot of binders and so forth, full of public information materials, which I set out on one table. The idea being, firstly, they contain a great deal of good information, and I was hoping that people would take the chance to use it as kind of a reading room, which they didn't. By and large, the binders were just out there on display, you know, lying open to show that there were things in them, but that was all. They didn't get referred to very much, which I thought was a great pity. Probably had something to do with the fact that the fan tables and other displays were located, aside from the art exhibit Earl Korshak art collection, which was located in a room around the corner from where the art show was, which was far from most of the rest of the stuff that was going on. Not in a difficult place to locate, though. It was it was easy to get to. It was just far from most of the other stuff that was going on. But if you've never been in the Hyatt Regency on Wacker Drive in Chicago, it's almost impossible to describe the layout. In fact, if you have been in that hotel, it's almost impossible to describe the layout. It's non-Euclidean. It's really only in Chicago. Anyway, but suffice to say that there are two towers, and that the convention space is in the lower levels of both towers, which are connected both by a sky bridge above ground and by an anti-sky bridge, a tunnel below ground. I don't really know if it's a tunnel is the problem, because ground level is very flexible in that region. As I've probably narrated before. But anyhow, in the third deep of the one hotel, the lowest level accessible to the public, is the large exhibit hall. And in the front or more accessible part of that was where the dealer's room was located, and the back or less readily accessible part of that was where exhibits and fan tables and voting and site selection and all those other important things were actually being held. Now, there was some traffic that went through there on account of, and I thought this was very nifty, they were doing some kind of solder-your-own-blinkety-circuits thing. And one of my traveling companions actually soldered me a little Atom badge thing with blinky lights on it, which I then proceeded to use as part of my display. So, at any road, the display was not as heavily trafficked as I would have liked. I didn't see all that many people over the course of the 4 days. And part of that has got to be due to the fact that a lot of the folks who attended the convention, now it was only about 2,600 people, as far as I've found. The warm body count was fairly small. World cons are often more like 5,000. This was only like 2,600, apparently. No more than 3,000. And so that's part of it. Part of it also, as I say, is just that I think a lot of the people who were there never made it down to the area where I was set up, unfortunately. So, let's see. So I had printed up, and again, the printed materials, I guess, was it only Saturday? That can't be. I guess it must have been only Friday that I was able to get in the leaflets and so forth as printed materials. But I did give away a reasonable number of leaflets and buttons and stickers. I had some interesting conversations, including some with people who work at nuclear power plants, because, of course, Illinois has a lot of nuclear power. Chicago is one of the more heavily nuclear-powered cities in America. I had a conversation with one person who said, well, is there even any room for any more baseload power? You know, I'm a nuclear engineer, she says, but is there even any future for nuclear power? It's mostly baseload, and is there even any more room for nuclear power? You know, more baseload power in the U.S. is, you know, the demand is growing spikier and spikier. And, you know, I said I thought there was, for a number of reasons. Firstly, because if people are talking about more building, heating, and cooling, more transportation being electrified, we're going to need more power of all kinds, and power that comes on a schedule, as opposed to power that comes when it feels like it, is definitely advantageous there. I will also say, while I was in Chicago, I took the opportunity to go to the Museum of Science and Industry, which is a fine museum, and they have Moldorama machines. I used the one that gives you a submarine. I did not use the one that gives you the Mercury capsule, because when I got to the Hall of Space, I had already used up my dollar coins. And so I didn't have any more dollar coins to feed the machine, which is a great pity, because I love Moldorama machines. What else can I say about that? Well, the thing is, the Museum of Science and Industry is known for its coal mine exhibit, but they really do need a good nuclear energy exhibit. I mean, considering Chicago is where the first nuclear reactor built by humans operated, and also the fact that Argonne National Laboratory, which has contributed so much to the development of nuclear energy, is in the Chicago area. The American Nuclear Society headquarters is in the Chicago area. And as I say, nuclear energy supplies a great part of the electricity people in Chicago use. They need a good nuclear energy exhibit. Unless I completely missed it, they don't have it. They've got an exhibit about using cow dung to make electricity. They've got a great big agribusiness hall, and that's one of the things in it. And I'm not against agribusiness. I think that having a big combine harvester cut open so you can see how it works is perfectly splendid. Anyhow, but what else can I say? The Worldcon, of course, is always enjoyable. I just wish that my outreach efforts were a bit more successful. As I say, I just there wasn't enough traffic at the display. I don't know what I'm going to do next year. The Worldcon is in Chengdu, China, and I'm not going to that. All right? Not going. I regret having not gone to the one that was in London. I was glad to go to the one that was in Melbourne, in Australia. But I'm not going to Chengdu. Anyhow, so yeah, I'm not, but the NASFIC is in Winnipeg. I think the Winnipeg folks are preparing for a very good convention. But I'm not sure how much display material I can realistically get across the Canadian border, because, of course, you can get in trouble with customs, is the problem. Need to figure that part out first. I mean, I'm going to talk to the organizers, but I need to figure that part out. Hopefully, also, we can get some nuclear energy programming and space travel programming, frankly, which there wasn't near enough of at this Worldcon. They had a panel saying why the world needs solar power. Big shrugs from me. SMJ says China is nice. This may be true, but I just couldn't help but thinking that if I were to show the nice people manning the Chengdu booth things that I saw on, you know, national TV news when I was about 8 years old, they would be arrested when they got home. That they're not legally allowed to know about what happened in Tiananmen Square, Beijing, in 1989. And that bothers me enormously. People not being legally allowed to know their own history. But, and I just don't feel that it's a very good idea to hold the Worldcon, which is, at bottom, a literary event in a country where people are authors are routinely subject to serious pressure to make their work conform to the goals and viewpoints of the political power structure, and if they don't, they could be imprisoned for that. I'm not comfortable with that at all. But what else is there to say about it? What else is there to say? Well, it's not that I, you know, it's not that I have anything against the Chinese as a people. I just don't want to go to the country that's controlled by their government. I would happily go to Taiwan or Singapore, right? But the PRC government makes me deeply uneasy. Lots of things make me deeply uneasy, actually. But I have to, you know, face and interact with some of them, or the other alternative is just to isolate myself more and more over the course of time until I turn into a mollusk. And I don't want to turn into a mollusk or a pumpkin like the Emperor Claudius. But that was a joke that you'll only get if you've read the Apocolocantosis of Lucian of Samosata, which I think is very unlikely. Although he did also write one of the first space travel stories, if the term can really be used, for the period before Copernicus and Kepler. Let's see, another stupid news. The Wall Street Journal talking about how in the Netherlands, to conserve gas, they're trying to convince people to take shorter showers. And then they interviewed some dingbat who commutes by bicycle but takes 1 5-minute shower a week. And says, oh, well, I'm just not dirty or smelly. Yeah, I'd rather not test that proposition myself, thank you very much. From my point of view, of course, what they should be doing now is working on all their thermal power plants, both their fuel-burning ones and their nuclear one, to tap off heat to distribute that heat to people. I know I keep hammering on this, but the idea that two-thirds of the heat that you pay for just gets dumped into the environment doesn't make any sense. Sure, it's costly in some sense to recapture that and send it to your home for your home use, but as we're seeing, if you don't do that, you might not have any hot water. I mean, come on, people, how basic is this? I have in my head an idea of how to, of, you know, the advertisement in German. I just don't know how to word it in Dutch. You know, kalt dusche, question mark, and the smiling atom symbol. Nein, danke, and then Atomfernwärme hilft. You know, nuclear district heating helps. Cold showers? No, thanks. But again, this is along the lines of, I saw this something, this is one of those TED Talks that'll cause your brain to die if you watch it. Guy with his project called Saving Food from the Fridge, in which he claims that basically refrigeration is a, not only wasteful of energy, but also causes food waste. And I'm thinking, dude, you are so out of touch with reality. This is incredible. In countries where refrigeration is widespread, food waste at the consumer end is relatively modest. I mean, some of that's down to packaging and preservatives and other things that we may not like very much, but we've sort of come to expect. But it's also, to a great extent, due to refrigeration. Refrigeration has become the default, universally accepted method of conserving food because it is really effective. In countries which have widespread refrigeration, loss of food at the consumer end to spoilage, insect damage, and so on is quite small. Most of the waste of food takes place when producers or middlemen destroy the stuff, like with the avocados they were dumping in Australia. So, that's my thought. But yeah, I know, again, it's somebody saying, well, we need to get closer to nature and reconcile ourselves as living beings with the food we eat as living beings. It's like, the pain! I'm sorry, I guess I'm being a little overdramatic. But this just strikes me as a great example of how people's ideas become twisted around and totally detached from the real world in which we live. Refrigeration does not cause food waste, and it's not a waste of energy either. Now, what I don't like is when you run your mechanical refrigerator inside your house, which is being cooled by a mechanical refrigerator known as an air conditioner. Those systems could be combined, perhaps, and the heat dumped directly outside the house. Or again, you could be connected to a district cooling system and not even have to have a mechanical refrigerator. You could just have an insulated cabinet with a coil of tubing running through it with a water glycol solution circulating through. I'll also mention that on my way to the Worldcon, I realized I had left behind the uranium glass vessel I meant to use as a donation jar. And so in an antique shop in Burlington, Kansas, where there's a nuclear power plant, I purchased a uranium glass pitcher. It looks like a cream pitcher, but it's much too large for a cream pitcher, while being simultaneously too small for a water pitcher. Maybe it's meant for milk? I don't know. Anyway, I paid, I think, the price was like $22.50, which is really more than I would normally pay for a thing like that, but I bought it anyway. I think the amount of donations that I got during the Worldcon was just about $22.50, so it sort of paid for itself. So that was kind of a wash. Now, speaking of Burlington, Kansas, I have a letter to the editor of the newspaper there, the Coffee County Republican, which I'm going to read you next week. Probably along with that other moon poem that I mentioned. But this is pretty much all for me for today. A step farther out, the weekly radio message of the Man and Adam Society comes to you on a non-radio, which is itself a service of the SDF Public Access Unix System, sdf.org. Great folks, I highly recommend them. If you wish to support these programs, you can send me money. paypal.me/prometheuslives. You can support my Patreon, patreon.com/publius_reads. But mostly I look forward to your cards and letters. Send those to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas.